Yeah. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, world, to UPRN 107.7 down in Louisiana. This is You Heard It Here First with what I host today, me, William Turner. Alex Dell couldn't be here today, and Ben Childs is in L.A., doing some connections in L.A. We have two dynamite guests from the Pennsylvania area. We have platinum-selling producer T-Life, and we got Mr. Keith out of the place where Wiz Khalifa's from, y'all know it, Pittsburgh. Say hello to the world, people. Guest.
Hey. What's up, Bill? How you doing, man?
Oh, we're doing live. We're gonna get into these questions. Now I wanna know from T Life, man, what made you want to get into music in the first place? Everybody wants to know, why did you wanna pick up the guitar and start playing?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I really didn't want to be in the music industry. That was not my first choice. I, you know, being raised in Miami, you know, we're all sports freaks down there. So I wanted to play football. That was my thing. Football and baseball and basketball, did weights and ran track. Yeah, that's what I wanted to do, but I got in the music industry. It's kind of weird, man. It's kind of weird. It's kind of strange, you know. But no, I had an injury when I was a young kid and prevented me from playing sports. So graduated over into the music industry some kind of way. I'll tell you about that later. Good. That's a long story.
That's great. Now, Keith, we want to know the same thing from you. Why did you want to get into the music industry?
Well, William, it's a long, first of all, I just want to say I'm honored to be on the show. T-Life, I've heard so much about you, man. I've got so much to share. Brother, you don't know who I am, but you go way back as far as my career is concerned. But anyway,
really?
To address the question at hand that Brother William has asked, this all started when I was 10 years old. I started playing drums, and it came about, I saw a Woolworth drum set back in the day. You know, I was like about 9, and my mother took me to Woolworth one day, and I saw up on the shelf this drum set, and I said, wow, man, I'd love to learn to play the drums one day. And sure enough, that Christmas, That's what was under the tree for me. And that started kind of like a love affair from there. And then later on, yeah, I mean, it's a long story and I don't want to be too lengthy, but that was the initial start for me. And then later on, the story even augments by me asking my teacher, I think I was in about third or fourth grade, I asked my teacher if I, instead of doing a book report, I could sing to the class for a grade. And so my brothers, I had a bongo, a set of bongo drums. And I don't know if you remember, on the B side of one of the Jackson 5's records, the song was called Maria.
I remember that song. It's a classic.
Remember? Yeah. So instead of doing the book report, she allowed me to sing, and that's the song I sang. And when I started singing the song, I remember the class was in awe, and then like other teachers came in to the room to see who is this that was singing. And you know what, the rest is kind of evident, man. I got an A plus and the whole thing. So it's kind of evolved from that, those two events in my life. And as I shared with you, Brother T Life, I'll share with you as we progress into the show, how powerful you've been in my life. You don't even know me, but I'll share as we go on. God bless, brothers. Go ahead.
Well, that sounds good, but I got to share this. You know, I was asked that question about how I got in the game, you know. But I was always a singer because my mother was a singer. And I played clarinet. That was my first instrument I played in school. But I wasn't really looking to have a career. I was kind of small. You know, I was in the sixth, seventh grade, somewhere in there. But I won. I got to tell you this, man. You're going to love this. I used to love a song called The Monster Mash.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I was looking in my lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. When my monster from his slab began to rise. And suddenly, to my surprise, hey, man, I did that song in front of the whole school at a talent show. I got myself two girls and a guy with a drum to do the beat. And the girls went, he did that mash. I said, he did this monster mash. And man, I tore the school up. I mean, I'm telling you, my grades went through the roof. I think the teachers liked me too, you know, in my mind, you know, one of them really liked me real good, you know, but being a young kid, you know, that was like my fantasy. Just to let you know, that was so funny. Anyway,
now
yeah, man,
where
we
was
got
that
a lot
at?
In common.
Was that in Florida or in Philly?
Yeah, that was in Florida. That was in Florida. Yeah. It was so much.
Wow,
fun.
Man, that's amazing. You sung the Monster Mash, old school.
The Monster
Holiday
Mash.
Classics.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Now.
Yeah, now we want to know, how did you get down with legendary singer? We all know him for Before I Let Go, Mr. Frankie Beverly. How did you connect with Frankie Beverly?
Well, when my mother moved to Philly, she moved in an area called Germantown. And we all lived in Germantown. Frank lived in Germantown. There were a few guys that came. I can't think of anybody's name. Red Tyson from the Temptations. Tyson is with the Temptations right
Tyson.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah, Ron Tyson. But Tyson and I grew up together, and Frankie, and John Fitch, who wrote Shame. You know, and several people. You'd be surprised the people that came from that particular area where we lived. And I had a little group called the High Tops. And Frankie had been out there for a while. You know, he had a group called the Butlers. And it was a singing group, but the group disbanded. And so Frankie was looking for a band, and he heard us. And we got together, and Frankie called the group Frankie Beverly and the Butlers. And then we went on and played the B circuit from Philadelphia to Connecticut to Rhode Island, Massachusetts. We played all over Virginia, you know, on the road. So I was on the road from like 16 years old up until the age of 22. I sort of like split the group at 22 years old. But that's how I met Frankie. And, you know, and that's the name of that song. You know,
wow.
We won't go anywhere.
Now, what label were y'all signed to? Were y'all signed to Gamble Records?
No. We weren't signed to any label. We were just a group out there hustling, man, you know, doing the road thing. And that came way later when Frankie signed with Capitol Records. But he Frankie had a deal before with the group The Butlers. They had a couple of records out. And so when I got with Frankie, I was fresh off the press from Florida. So, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were young kids, man. Yeah. Wow. And then the group turned into Raw Soul, Frankie Beverly and Raw Soul here in Philly.
Oh, wow.
And then Frankie wanted to go to California. I was sort of like tired of the road, so I went and became a record producer and got with Philly International with Kenny and Huff. And Frankie went to California and got a deal with Capitol Records with Marvin Gaye. Marvin hooked that up. And I went on to do what I did. And it was a beautiful thing, you know.
Now, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, Keith, how did you actually get into the industry per se? How did you actually become a professional singer?
Sure. So, cut to William and T-Life, the rest of the gentleman. So, T-Life will start to open up now as I share with him the story. Now, so I had a basement band. So, cut to, I was about maybe 13, 14 at this time. So, I started recruiting cats in my school to play, to join a band. So, I put together a group, and we just started rehearsing, man. Rehearsing, top 40s. What was out there, you know what I mean? And we would rehearse maybe about three, I would say every Saturday, but I know maybe during the week because we had school and stuff like that, probably two or three times, maybe during the week. And we got really, really tight. Really, really tight. So the first thing we did, man, is we did one hit up at Danbury State College. And tore it down. And then we entered the New York had a citywide band contest, and it was going to be held at the band shell down in Central Park. So lo and behold, so it started about about noon. So it was like noon to like 6 o'clock, maybe 25, 30 groups. And God bless this man. We emerged victorious. And who should be in the crowd, Brother T Life, but Eric King and Bob Schwade. And now he's smiling. So my dear brothers, they said, hey, listen, okay, here's our card. We want to talk to you guys, next week, early next week. So, you know what happened. I called Monday morning. And I said, Mr. King, I'm honored. Da, 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 da. He said, no problem. Don't get excited. Come on down. And we got on down there, man. And we started talking about signing us. And within about 6-7 months after the, back and forth, the rest is history, man. We signed and they got us in the studio and we started working, and that's really how it really started for me, man. So Brother T-Life,
not to cut you off, but are you sure that it was me and not a lookalike?
No. Come on, brother. You were the first producer that I said, wow, man, because they had the records up there. I said, whoa. I said, fantastic. So the first cat's name that I heard, man, was T-Life because he did Shame and, it was the Evelyn thing. And, I was in the camp now and, it was just crazy, and that started me off. Yeah, that's how it all started. That's how it all started, brother. That's how it all started for me. So Eric and Bob were like my first mentors, They, of course, I had my band but they said, man, we see something special in you. You'll probably end up, breaking on your own and stuff like that and going forth to do, some really cool stuff, He used to really talk to me. Yeah. He used to, pull me to the side and say, hey, listen, this is how this is done. This is about publishing. This is about your points and da, da, da. Even at that, tender young age, he started, really mentoring me and you know, bringing me along, you know. So, that's
man. That's awesome.
Well, that's a very interesting story, man. And since then, you've been doing pretty good, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've just been, you know, as I said, I just keep it moving, keep improving, and keep grooving, man. You know, that's what
there
it's
you
all
go.
About, you know,
that's what it's all about, baby.
That's what it's all about, man. You know, keep it moving.
Well, you heard that here first.
And keep growing. You know, but now, it's been a tremendous journey, though, man, to growth and development and thus, you know, everything else. As even as a man, you know, the industry grows you, you know, in just ways, man, that, hey, you know, it grows you up. You know, it enlightens you to a lot, you know, of life lessons, too. So back to you guys.
Well, now we're going to get into, we talk about mentors and people. We're going to talk about T-Life's early days at Philly International. Now, can you elaborate on how you got down with Philly International, Leon Huff, Dexter Wanzel, Norman Harris, and all them great, great musicians and songwriters?
What do you want to know?
How you first got started? What was your initial reaction?
With that conglomeration of people?
Yes.
Well, let me put it this way. Philadelphia is a small community. Big city, small music community. Everyone knew everyone anyway. You know, everybody did something different. So you're not talking about you know, a couple guys here and we all got together and then boom, boom, boom. It didn't happen like that. You know, Kenny Gamble himself even had a group called Kenny Gamble and the Romeos, you know, and a lot of us at that particular time were out on the road. We were doing the road thing at early ages, 16, 17, 18, 19, you know, I mean, early, man, you know. A lot of the kids now, a lot of people now are late bloomers. Some of these younger kids now in the hip-hop community are getting into it. And, well, you know, you got Boyz II Men who started early, you know, people like that. It's a young man's game. It's a young person's game. And we were young and we were at it and we were up and down that road and we were doing our thing. But in terms of all the people like the Norman Harris's, the Ronnie Baker's, the Kenny Gamble's, the Leon Huff's, the Joe Jefferson's, you know, Nat Turner's Rebellion. Now, he had a group called Nat Turner's Rebellion. If you don't know who Joe Jefferson is, he was Bruce Hawes and Charlie Boy Simmons. They were three partners, and they wrote Mighty Love, Sadie, things of that nature. We all knew each other from teenagers in different groups and different bands and different, you know, things that we were doing. So Philly International, the genius of Kenny Gamble was the ability to grab all of the people who had been doing things in the industry in Philadelphia and pool them all together and to create that Philly sound.
Wow.
And that's how it was born. It was already there. All you had to do was pull it in and harness it, and voila, you know, Fuji from the Delphonics, you know, the Intruders, you know, with Phil Terry and all those guys. Man, everybody knew everybody anyway. So it was a small community in that respect. The Chambers, I mean, Soul Survivors, Carl Chambers, Roland Chambers. You know, all of these people, man, I knew them all. We all played together and individually. So it was a great time to grow up, man. And there's a lot of camaraderie. And there you go. You know, that's the story of that. That's how that happened.
Now, that's awesome. Yes, you hit it on the nail, man. You said some amazing things. But you had a chance to work with one of our favorite groups, the Intruders. How was that working with the Intruders?
Well, that was great with the Intruders. I mean, Phil Terry was one of my writing partners in Philly International. Inside Philly International, what we had was, I would like to say the competition was fierce. and we had everybody had their own clique, so to speak. And I don't want to use that word clique because the whole thing was a total clique. But inside Philly International, you had McFadden and Whitehead and Vic Karstoffen.
Wow.
They did all of their stuff together. Then you had myself, Talmadge Conway, and Philip Terry was the leader of the Intruders. And then you had next door to us was Charlie Boy, Bruce Hawes, and of course Joe Jefferson. Across the hall from us was Kenny and Huff. Around the corner was Tommy Bell and Linda Creed. Okay, Bunny Sigler was in the other office with his parachute in it, at the ceiling, you know.
Wow.
So it still hurt. So that's how it was. And the competition was fantastic, man, because, you know, we were writing. And in those days, you know, our idea of a demo was demos were done inside your writing office. And when you came out, boom, you cut. Boom, you cut. You know what I'm saying? That's how we work. And it was around the clock, man. And this is what you call pressure writing.
Mm.
You know, not
That's
the
amazing.
Oh, no, let me sit back and groove and get my, oh, I got to think about this line. Yeah, maybe that happened, but you didn't have a lot of time to think too much about a line because there were too many cats in there trying to eat. So the competition was steep. If you didn't get there first, and if you didn't have that, you didn't have that mighty sound or that mighty lyric or that mighty song, you didn't get on that album.
Mm.
A simple process.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So, yeah. So you worked with the Ebonys and Bunny Sigler. How was working with Bunny Sigler, one of the all-time greats?
Bunny is probably one of the best singers and most creative people I've ever worked with. Bunny and I worked and did several albums together. I worked with Bunny pretty exclusively for years. You know, we wrote a lot of stuff together and we worked together, you know, all the time. You know, Instant Funk is actually Bunny Sigler's discovery.
Mm.
Bunny discovered Instant Funk. And a group called the T&Js from Trenton, New Jersey. So we all worked together, you know, and it was interesting.
I'm going to tell you one of my favorite songs.
Go ahead.
I love, it's called the Five Fingers of Death theme. That theme you did with Bunny, man, is incredible.
Boy, you reached back, and I swear to God, you're the first person I ever talked to that actually brought that song up, man. That's wow, man. Five Fingers of Death from the movie. Five Fingers of Death. You remember the movie?
I have the DVD.
You remember
for
that?
All of y'all that don't have it, go buy the DVD. Five Fingers of Death. It's a good
Five Fingers
classic.
Of Death. That's wow, man. That's crazy. Yeah, that was an interesting project. You know, I think when we saw the movie, it's a long story. It's a great song. It was a great track. I forgot all about it, man. Jesus.
Well, talk a little bit about it. Talk a little bit about it, because the world doesn't know about it like I know about it.
Five Fingers of Death was taken from a movie that we had seen, and it was a martial arts film, and it was about five fingers, a guy who could hit you with five fingers and kill you, you know.
Right.
And so we wrote a track to it. We went in the studio, Bunny Sigler, myself, Richie Rome did the arrangements, the strings and horns. It was a fabulous, fabulous production. And that's about as much as I can tell you about it. We had fun recording it, you know. That's all I can tell you about it, man.
Well,
it's been a while.
You never heard the track? They need to go find the 45 or go buy a compilation. It's a Philly compilation that came out on Legacy, I believe, that has that song.
Wow.
You need to hear it. It's an incredible
song.
That's crazy. On that. Now, we were talking privately. You talked about being good friends with Mr. Harold Melvin. How was it like being around Harold Melvin from the Blue Notes?
Harold Melvin was, I learned so much from Harold Melvin. Harold Melvin was like the godfather to a lot of the doo-wop guys. Because Harold had been around, you know, he had been around with the original Blue Notes. He was a young boy with the original Blue Notes. And then later on, he formed his own Blue Notes, you know, after the guys get so old, you know, they, the next guy, they'll pass the baton. So they passed it to Harold. And Harold became the Blue Notes, and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, to be more exact. And it was a totally, I won't say a totally different group. I'd have to go back and do a little research about that. But Teddy was not in that particular group, not in the beginning. Teddy was not there. I don't think Teddy was even even in the business, not like that. And but Harold was a great teacher, only if you wanted to learn. You know, you don't cast your pearls among swine. You know, guys really, really, if they want to be in this game and they really have a desire to learn, you know, people like Harold will give it away because it's not his to keep. That's just like me. I will give it away because I want people to understand. I want these young guys to know the business aspect of it because it's called music business. It's a business.
That's right.
Music is just a byproduct. You know what I mean? It's something that we do, but it's a money game. So if we don't know how to make money from a gift that God gave us, then there's a problem with that. You know, so Harold was the kind of dude that would give back to you, would give back if you really truly wanted to learn. And I was one of those that wanted to learn. So I learned a lot from Harold. You know, of course, I was a knucklehead, and when I was, I mean, I get smacked upside the head, you know. But and there was several guys around like Harold, but we'll talk about them later, not now. That's who Harold was.
Yes. Wow. So you heard that here first. You talked about Mr. Harold Melvin, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. Now, Mr. Keith, who was your mentor? Who was somebody else in the industry that really mentored you and steered you on the right path to really want to take this farther?
I think Brother Key Life is going to smile because after Pop King and Bob somewhat left my life, not really, they never really left, but you know, we just moved on. My next manager technically was Ron G. Mosley.
My dear friend, Ron. Oh my God.
He's laughing again.
I love Ron. Are you kidding? Yeah. That was my buddy. Oh my God. Yeah, really? Ron was your manager, man?
That's right, my dear brother. And once again, your name.
Crazy.
Your name and your records, you know, you had given him a couple of the platinum albums. So again, here's
Yeah.
Life. You know,
absolutely.
So I mean, you know, my life, it's like, it's just tremendous, man. But Ronnie was just tremendous as far as a mentor and a daddy figure in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he introduced me to Clarence Avant and Jerome Gasper. We sat and we had lunch. And I can't tell you, he was just immeasurable, man, in my
Listen,
education.
Ron was probably one of the classiest guys in the industry. Everybody
That's
knew
right.
him. You
That's
know,
right.
he had a lot of poise, and he was just the epitome of what you would want an A&R guy or president of a label to be. He understood artists. They understood him. He understood music, and you could really sit down in his office and talk to him. And he was just as crazy as one thing that we don't realize. I'm going to tell you something. I've been in a few record companies, and when I look at the people in it, one thing you realize that everybody's a character. And I don't mean characterization in terms of being a clown or, you know, a cartoon character. I'm talking about characters. Everybody has a character. And some characters are flamboyant. Some characters are open. Some characters are closed. You know, you can't get along with everybody, and everybody ain't going to like you. You know, you can forget about that. But in terms of being characters, most people in the arts are characters. That's who we are, you know. And I've had the pleasure of really being around some great guys who had great character and who understood me. And then again, there was those that didn't, but I didn't really give a beep about them anyway. So
yeah, we totally understand that. We totally understand that.
I hope you feel me now.
Oh, we definitely feel you. Go right ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
We're going to ask you one more question, Mr. Life. I mean, before we go to our commercial break at the top of the hour.
Just call me T. Just call me T. Just call me T. Royalty, you know.
Yeah,
I was supposed to be a joke, but you got so serious there for a minute, you know, I had to break it up. Just call me Royalty.
Yeah, we
want
to.
Royalty.
Royalty, most definitely. We want to ask you about your interaction. You're music royalty in our book. You are music royalty. We want to ask you about your interaction with Theodore Pendergraft. How did you meet Theodore, or Teddy Bear, as they used to call him?
Oh, well, I mean, as I told you in the beginning, I met Teddy in Atlantic City. Hmm. I didn't know Teddy in Philadelphia, but I met him in Atlantic City. And Teddy worked at a club called Edge Hills. There was a club in Edge Hills, in Atlantic City called Edge Hills. There was a club in Atlantic City called the Wonder Gardens. And there was a club in Atlantic City called the Harlem Club, I do believe. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure. I know the OJs worked there. It's the first time I met Eddie and those guys, you know. And I was working at this club called Edge Hills. You know, they used to book Frankie Beverly and the Butlers there. We were the Butlers then. We would go in and do this gig. And Teddy was the guy that took the tickets at the door.
Mm.
And subsequently, what happened was that Teddy played drums and nobody knew it. And there used to be And there used to be a guy by the name of Little Royal, who was like James Brown's little brother. He wasn't James's brother, but they passed him off as James's brother because he looked just like James, danced like James. He wore the wardrobes and everything. And allegedly, he was sort of like commissioned by James to do this. You know, he had the rite of passage to do the B circuit, you know. And so when you couldn't get James Brown, when James is really, really hot, you couldn't get James, you could get Little Royal. So Little Royal performed at Edge Hills one night, and the drummer didn't show, or something happened, and Teddy Pitt played drums. And that's how Teddy got to play with Little Royal and went on the road with Little Royal. And I hadn't seen Teddy for many, many years, and until he got with Harold. He went to play drums with Harold, and Harold took him off of the drums and put him up front. That's how great he sounded singing. So that was how it happened. Yeah.
That's amazing. That is amazing, you being around all them legendary artists now. Before we go to break, we're going to ask Mr. Keith, is there any artist that you... I mean, songwriter or producer that really rubbed off on you, like that you met during passing?
Well, sure,
and you're like, wow.
Sure, man. I've been blessed. I've worked with Sergio George, who is a Latin music legend now. And I mean, he did a session for us, man, back in the '80s when we were in audio school. when I was in audio school. I went to Institute of Audio Research, and then I went to the Center for the Media Arts. But I was doing some writing with a gentleman by the name of Roger Pinnock, fabulous writer and guitar player. And we had Sergio come in, man, and he just lit it up, man. I mean, he was just a fabulous keyboard player, and he was showing us back then that he had that Latin flavor, because he put some, I wish I could let you guys hear the track, but because I still have it, but he put some Latin spiced horns on one of our R&B tracks, lit it up, man. Lit it up. Nice. You know, maybe another show. We'll let you hear that. But
yeah, we're definitely going to have down another show.
Of course, absolutely, man. So you got Sergio George, and I was blessed. And I was blessed to work with Greg Williams, Switch.
Oh, yeah.
From the legendary group.
They'll never
Motown
be.
Motown group Switch. Yeah, sure. Great guy. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Fabulous musician, man. What a wonderful man to have worked with. I met Ted Reilly. Didn't work with Ted. Almost worked with him, but I knew him. I knew him really well. You know, I met Ted. Who else? I was blessed in 1991. I did two songs for George Benson. His house. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm serious, man. And that man is, let me tell you, he's really something, man. And funny. Oh, my gosh. He's like Bill Withers, man. I heard that. I've never met Bill Withers, but I've heard that Bill Withers is like the funniest, one of the funniest cats on the planet. Same thing with Mr. B. We call him Mr. B.
I heard that, too. I heard Bill is really, really fun to be around, you know. And
right. But
you know,
it's the same thing, man. Yeah. We played a game of pool, and that's what started the whole thing. It's such a long story. I mean, you know, we don't have time to get, you know, intricately into, you know, the meetings. But I have just been blessed to meet so many people, man. So many wonderful people. Freedom Williams from CNC Music Factory. That was my boy for like, 2 years. We worked, we did a little part-time project in New York, retail marketing together. And what was so impressive about Freedom is we used to talk about music, but the specific CNC Music Factory project, he kept that hush-hush. He kept that to himself. And
wow. So just before the album came out.
This before, brother, this is like 2-3 years before the album came out, man. We did this little part-time telemarketing thing, man, down on 23rd Street in Manhattan. And, you know, that was my boy. that was my work partner, you know? So when he exploded, man, I was really, really happy for him, man. Really happy for him. Because, you know, we kind of struggled together, you know, coming up. So these are just some of the people, man, that I was blessed to have met. I don't know if this is a name that might ring a bell, but this was a tremendous vocalist. His name was Dino Terrell. I don't know if you ever heard that, but he did a lot of work with Leroy Burgess.
Okay.
You guys know Leroy Burgess?
Yeah. We definitely know who Leroy Burgess is.
Yeah,
I know Black Ivory and all that stuff. So yeah, I know.
Right.
I know the song.
Exactly. That's his group. That's his main group. But of course,
they had You and I. He had all them other disco groups.
He produced the Fantastic Alims. He did work with Jocelyn Brown and Fred McFarlane. Yeah. So
he did that. Caught up in a One Night Love Affair.
There you go. There you go. So, I mean, you know, it's just endless, man. Tony Lee is another cat that I was blessed to have met.
The house guy, Tony Lee?
The house cat, Tony Lee, man. Tony Lee, Reach Up. That was his big smash hit, you know.
That's a classic.
Big
for
smash.
All the others
yeah.
don't know who know Chicago
Absolutely.
House music,
yeah.
Tony Lee is a big major classic. Yeah, we're going to say this before we go to our break. Be on the lookout Sunday on TV One. They're going to have the documentary on Switch. He's been on that show, Mr. Greg Williams.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Sunday,
wow.
The Switch documentary on Unsung with the original entire band. Be on the lookout for that.
Wow. Oh, that's going to be great.
What a wonderful cat, man. Yeah, wonderful cat to have worked with. You know?
Yes, he is a wonderful cat. And we have two wonderful guests here. We got Mr. Keith. We got T-Vife. We got it's a whole Pennsylvania type thing today, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, in the house.
Yeah.
The bird.
Yes, yes, yes. You remember Key Life from It's a Shame, Vicky Sue Robinson. The list goes on.
Right.
And he gets stuff with legendary Phyllis Hyman.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Now, we're about to go to a break. Now, let's take it to a break.
Well, let's get with it.
All right, Joe.
You clear, man. back.
Welcome back, world, to UPRN 107.7. You heard it here first. You can check us out on iHeartRadio, our new family, and you can check us out on iTunes. We're always on iTunes after the show is finished. And we're getting back with Mr. T-Life and Mr. Keith Grooves, the funkiest guys on the planet right now.
We've been talking about it.
That major history. If you know T-Life, he's worked with one of my favorites, one of my all-time favorites. Two of my all-time favorites. And one of them being Evelyn Champagne King with the biggest dance record of the 1970s. Shane.
Yes, sir.
Tell us how that whole thing happened with Evelyn, how you met Evelyn, how you got in the studio, the whole nine. Break it down.
Wow. Well, let's see. I'm going to edit this down.
Go right ahead.
I'm in the studio one night, and I think it was during a Lou Rawls session. You know, we had the studio right there in 309. There were two Sigmas, one inside 309 and one on 12th Street. And our offices were right across from the studio. I mean, you take like two steps and you're right inside the studio. And that particular time of night, there's nobody in there but the cleanup crew. You know what I'm saying? Security's downstairs, so you can't get into the building. So there should not have been anyone else in that building but the cleanup crew and us. And so I step outside of the studio, and I hear this voice through the hallways. And I'm walking around, and I said, Jesus. And I said, I wonder who that is. And I look in this office, and this little skinny thing is in this scene. That's the honest God truth. Little skinny thing. She was small as well. She wasn't but big as a minute. And I said, excuse me. I said, baby, you hear somebody in here singing? She said, no. I said, really? She said, no. So I thought I was hallucinating. So I said, well, I better go drink me some water. Anyway, or get me a soda or something. You know, so right. I went around, went back in the studio, and it was curious, you know. I said, you know what, let me go back out this door and check around. And then I went outside. Nobody's out there. So I hear this voice again. I go around the other side, you know, sneaking around the other side. And there she was again. Now she's cleaning the bathrooms, you know. And I said, aha. It was you. She started laughing, you know. I said, you sound great, you know. And then she told me who she was. And she said, well, Eric's my father, because Eric was the head cleanup guy. You know, he had you know, his company. You know, they were cleaning up Philly International at night, you know, and the whole nine yards.
Mm. Wow.
That's how I met her. And the rest is history. And I talked to her dad, and he was adamant about her being recorded, and he wanted her, you know, to do some things. So I said, well, fine. And being a staff producer and a staff writer at that particular time, you know, I had to do things by the book.
Sure.
So I did ask permission to at least go and record her, and Kenny said, fine, you know, see what you can do, you know, boom, boom, boom. But at that particular time, you know, Philly International wasn't really signing kids. They weren't signing any kids. You know, we did the Jacksons down there, but the Jacksons had already been kids already. They weren't kids anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But to take a 14, 15-year-old kid, that's a child, and try to make it something, you know, it wasn't really about that. But I like working with kids, so I didn't have any problems with it, so I took her and I started working with her for a couple of years. I worked for her. So everybody thinks it was overnight. No, it wasn't, because I had to teach her how.
It never is, brother.
You know what I'm saying? I had to teach her how to stand at the mic, how to project, you know, to be a recording artist. You dig what I'm saying? Because she was already doing little stuff out, you know, where she had a little band and things like that. But she wasn't a recording artist. And, you know, and I think I did a pretty decent job. She had everything.
Awesome job.
She had she had the whole ball of wax. All I had to do was come and polish her up, and the rest was history, you know. So that's how that happened.
Yes, brother.
Was
God
that
bless.
Was that dynamic enough for you?
That was super dynamic, because you did the song Shame. That's one of the biggest disco hits of all time. Everybody and their mother knows the song Shame. It's been
sampled
numerous of times.
You know, there's a myth behind that song. The truth of the matter is, that was the last song I cut on the album.
Wow.
It was the last song. It was not the song that landed anything. It was the last song. John Fitch and Reuben Cross brought that song. I knew John. John and I had been, we wrote I Don't Know If It's Right together. So when he came with this song that him and Reuben had written, I said, let me hear it. And I said, man, this is great. You know, I love it. But it wasn't complete, you know. It wasn't what it is now. And so
you had to put your magic on it.
I had to put the magic on it. And it was the last song that we recorded. Now, when we dropped the album, the first single, I think, was Smooth Talk. And then Teddy Pendergrass and I wrote Dancing, Dancing, Dancing. So RCA wanted to go with that. That didn't climb the charts like we thought it was. So what do you think we're going to do now? What are you going to do now, Pinky? Well, let's come with that Shame. And that's how it happened. That was the last song.
That was amazing.
Yeah, it was.
That went gold. That was a huge single in the disco era. That
oh my
was
God.
Amazing.
It was awesome. And the credit really goes to a lot of people, man. I think Warren Schatz did a great job of pulling in the right people to do a remix on it. Because I that song was about 9 minutes long when I recorded it. Mm-hmm. And Dave and another gentleman, they were doing a lot of club stuff. They came in and they did the remix on it. They also did a remix on Boogie Oogie Oogie. They did that too. And
Taste
Boogie,
the Honey.
Oogie, Oogie.
Wow.
Yeah. Taste the Honey. And these guys were doing disco mixes. And to this day, I mean, the disco mix is really, really what catapulted that song. And I got to give them credit, all of those people, you know. So that's what
I must say that, because everybody who remembers Studio 54, Paradise the Garage, that song was a fixture on the dance floor.
Oh, man. I went there just to see people dance off of it. I was like, wow, I was floored. I said, hey, they're really grooving off of this. You know.
Yeah, I have to interject.
I tried to stand up in the middle of the floor one night and say, yo, I did that. Hey, I did that. You know, but nobody paid me no attention, you know.
Yeah, you want to say something, Kevin? I mean, Keith.
No, I was just about to share with Brother T-Life there, man, that I was blessed and honored to work with Warren as well. Warren Schatz. Yeah, we did vocals at his house. At his house.
Really?
Yeah, we did. Yes, sir. Yes, we did, Brother T.
Oh.
We did some of the vocals to the group that Eric and Bob signed, my band, Essence of Sound.
Wow.
We did our vocals in his bathroom.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
You know,
Warren
was as an executive, you know, a lot of people don't, and I don't want to cut you off, but do you realize that some of the guys that are presidents and vice presidents of record companies are, and I don't want to use this expression, I use it in a joking way, but are frustrated musicians and artists.
Yeah, sure. Sure, yeah.
And some of these guys, man, are great singers and great players. And Warren Schatz was a great engineer. I worked with Warren. That wicked engineer, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Hey, he had a
nice rig in his house. I said, you know, I said, wow, look at this. Yeah. We were at his house doing some stuff, man. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, man. He did Vicky Sue Robinson and turned the beat around.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that was a great thing. That was good. Yeah. And that kid that wrote that, I don't know if he did. But I know Warren probably did the engineering on it. If he didn't, then one of the guys there did. So he was real close. I mean, that was his artist, Vicky Sue. That was
That's
his,
amazing.
That was his baby. Yeah.
Well, I think it's about time for us to hear that. We're going to play something from Keith Grooves. Joe, I want us to play Smooth Surface. I love the track. I know y'all going to love it. It's a chill out record. We need records like this in the world today.
All right.
Can you tell us a little bit about your song before we play the track?
Of course, man. This was written in about 2009. And, you know, it started most like most of my tunes, man. I just started the piano, you know, and if it feels good, man, you know, T-Life will attest to this. If it feels good, you know, you just start laying it down. And then I, you know, just laced some strings on top. It kind of gave me a little feel of my man Barry White. And so if you hear some of the arrangements in there, you'll kind of somewhat hear a little bit of Barry in there and a little, you know, but it's of course it's a little bit it's like a jazzy R&B thing, you know. But I hope you guys like it.
I'll tell you like I told Clyde Davis when he wanted to play this song for me for Phyllis. I said, "Don't play it for me. Just let me hear it." Just let me hear it. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man, play that thing. I want to hear it. Let's go.
Yeah, let's check it out.
Well, you heard that here first, and we're gonna debut this on you.
You clear, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, let me make sure what's playing is playing now. Do, 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 do. Damn thing was trying to queue up a promo from another show. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
Wow.
Never failed.
Welcome, welcome back. We just heard the song. We heard the song by Keith Groove. We're back on UPRN 107.7. You heard it here first. I'm with the host, William Turner. Ben Childs is in L.A. Alex Darrow is on leave for today. We're here with the Dynamite, the legends of the funk, Mr. T-Life, and we have Mr. Keith Groove. Now, we want to ask y'all a question. What do y'all feel? How do y'all feel about the music of today? What do you like?
Keith,
and dislike?
Why don't you take? Well, Keith, you should take that one first.
I have to say it. I have to say it, Brother T, Brother William. I'm
yes.
a bit disappointed. I really am. I mean, you know, it's the songs of today just lack a whole lot of substance. You got some talented artists out there. You do, and I don't want to put down anybody. You know, everybody's got a really unique and special gift. But it's the way it's used and how it's being done now. A lot of it is just, you know, not really up to standard. And Brother T-Life will attest to back when he was doing music, because I think he might be a little bit older than me. You know, no pun intended, but that was music. You know, 70s, 80s, that was really, really, really quality stuff. And I'm not putting down any of the artists of today. You know, there's some really, you know, I think Justin's doing some really cool stuff, you know, Usher, you know, and the guys. But a lot of what I'm hearing, man, is just not really, you know, it's not really quality stuff. It's not stuff that's going to have any kind of longevity. You know, and when you start cussing like that on records, man, I mean, you know, I was blessed to be interviewed. I did a magazine last year because of the single I had out. And they asked me this same question. And I shared with them that, you know, I shouldn't have to come to my, I shouldn't have to come to my, I have a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old, two girls, I'm blessed. I shouldn't have to come to them and explain to them why I said a certain thing in a record. You know what I mean? And these records, they outlive us. T-Life will, Brother T-Life will attest to this, man. The records will outlive you. That's the immortality that God has blessed us with, you know, here on earth. These records, they outlive us. That's your legacy. That's your divine legacy. And, you know, so people, you know what I'm saying? So people, they're going to listen to this and say, whoa, you know, parental discretion advised, you know, that type of thing. No. What I mean, come on, man. Come on. You know, you can see, and that was the beauty of that classic music back there that Teddy was doing that Earth, Wind & Fire was doing, Maurice and the Boys. That was the beauty of what was done back then, man. You left so much of it to the imagination. You know what I mean? It was the allure. It was just the sexiness of it. Now, man, it's this overt thing. To me, it seems, man, that the more overt, the more it sells. You know what I mean?
I'm very
disappointed, gentlemen. Gentlemen, I'm very, very disappointed. I'm very disappointed.
I'm disappointed, too. Because me being a younger guy, I'm younger than a lot of y'all. I'm in my 30s, almost in my 40s. And I listen to people like R. Kelly, who, it's not a secret. He uses nursery rhymes and makes them sexual. I don't want my little niece listening to them type of songs. It's catchy because it's like a nursery rhyme, but it's really explicit. It might not be explicit with cuss words, but inappropriate things for the young audience.
Yeah, man, you shouldn't have to explain.
There's a place and a time for that. And I remember when I first heard Blowfly, I had to sneak the Blowfly records. It wasn't like we were hearing Blowfly on the radio. I had to sneak and go to my friend's uncle's house and go listen to Blowfly or Rudy Ray Moore records, Richard Pryor.
Absolutely.
It wasn't out in the open. There was a time and a place for that.
Absolutely.
And on good music like T-Life, Evelyn, Phyllis Hyman, Miles Davis, Coltrane, Jimi Hendrix.
Absolutely.
That was music.
That was music.
I'm not knocking the young audience, never knocked the young audience, but That was music.
That was music.
And nowadays, it seems like nowadays with people like Bruno Mars with his latest record, they're bringing back the funk. The funk is coming back.
Yes, brother.
And I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about that?
I feel fantastic, man, because I'm working on something right now, man, that I really think might bring some heat to the forefront. That's all I'm going to say. I shared that with you, my brother, when we spoke yesterday, that I'm working on some stuff now. I've got a tremendous artist, man, that I've just been blessed and privileged to meet online. He's from the UK. And I told you, man, he's got this kind of a Weekend Usher vibe. His voice, man, I'm telling you, he's really good, man. And I'm going to get him to lace this track. And I'm feeling very, very confident. We might have something.
That's super, super awesome. Now we're going to ask T-Life, what does he feel about the today? But I know what I feel. We want to get your point of view.
Well, first of all, let me say, Keith, you said that I was a little bit older than you. I have a birthday coming up on October the 12th. I turned 39. And I just wanted you to know that. You know. Okay, so moving on. moving right along. I have mixed emotions about it. I'm going to tell you why. I'll tell you what. The music industry has always been a young man's game. Okay. No excuse for vulgarity and all of that kind of stuff. The first time I ever heard vulgarity was probably Red Fox in the Specialty album. Or Jackie, when I went to Uptown Theater and saw Jackie Mobb's Mabley. Oh, my God. You know, stuff like that. Okay. Now, those are specialties. Most of the music when I grew up was sexual. The sexual part of it was subdued. It was more subliminal.
Right.
You know, you had to use your imagination.
Yes, sir.
I have a problem with some of the music today because of the way that it's. Let me give you, for instance, there's a lot of vulgarity. There's a lot. It's too suggestive, number one.
Absolutely.
To be suggestive and to be subliminal with it is one thing. And I'll give you, for instance, like in a minute, one of the songs I cut on Evelyn when she was 14 years old was called two songs. I don't know if it's right. That was one. And another one was like, Let's Start All Over Again.
Yeah,
now,
at
those in that, okay, in that day and time, I had to cut stuff that the young kids didn't have no radio stations to listen to. Everybody listened to the same stations with the same music. So it wasn't as diversified as it is now, okay? The hip-hop station, you know, the hip-hop, they got their own thing and this and that and the other. You know, the freedom of speech, we can say what we want to say and this and that and the other. The only problem with the freedom of speech ain't free because it costs something. It's either it's going to cost you your morality, you dig what I'm saying, and what kids are hearing out here, they're repeating and they're doing these things. And some kids watch television and see people get killed, and they go out and they'll do it too. But they don't realize those actors are going to get up and say, hey, man, how was that take? How did I die?
Right.
You died that time pretty good. But why don't you go back and die again? This time we're going to put some more blood on it. Okay, well, which side do you want me to die on the left side? See, they don't get it. Some of these kids think it's real. Okay, now, let me break it down a little further. I like hip-hop. I've been working with a lot of hip-hop for a lot of years. With a lot of hip hop artists. I got sons, they all do hip hop, they all produce hip hop and that whole thing.
Sure.
There's some amazing creativity in some of it.
Absolutely.
And some amazing creativity now is in some of this stuff, and you know, I can't knock it. I think I think some of the stuff, when I listen to it now, I just think it's a little too vulgar. But when, especially, I hear you saying you got two daughters. I got granddaughters. I get in the car. I turn on black radio. Mm. I'm going to be very specific with this because I'm pissed off about it. And then we go around and we said, we talk about why are our kids being all screwed up? Because we letting them hear garbage that's put on the damn radio. Everything ain't good that's hip hop. Everything ain't good, that's pop. Everything ain't good, that's R&B. It's just the way it is. You know, everything that we hear on that radio ain't good. Somebody got some money to get it promoted. That's it.
That's right.
That it's good.
That's right.
Right? I've always been sexually aware and understanding that, you know, if I'm going to make music in a secular world, then I'm going to have to be a little bit understanding in how I present it,
right,
and how I talk to the audience and what I'm trying to portray, and giving them the mindset to at least use their mind and say, oh, I know what he's talking about, you know what I'm saying, you know,
right.
I don't know if it's right was a classic, because I don't know if it's right. Now you take the average little 15-year-old girl, and here comes the boyfriend. And they get into a situation where he wants sex, you know. Mm. And she's saying, I don't know if it's right to give my love to you tonight. I don't know if I should when I know you're no good. Okay? Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. All right? That's it's as innocent as you can get, because not only do young girls say it, old girls say it too.
Right.
Okay?
Right. That's true. Right.
Okay, now I did another one on her that was maybe a little bit more promiscuous, but it was called Let's Start All Over Again. We can do it. I know we can. We've got love in the palm of our hands. You can do it and make me cry. I don't care, just as long as it's right. Now, what the hell am I talking about? Ooh, baby, let's start all over again. Then I say, making love. Well, I caught a lot of hell for that, a lot of slack. How could you cut such a song on a young girl like that? I said, I did it because she could deliver it.
Mm.
And it wasn't to the point where it was so sexually outlandish that it couldn't be done. If a child her age could deliver the song and make it believable, what I'm selling is her talent and her ability to deliver the song. You dig what I'm saying? Because at that time, we didn't have a lot of... You understand where I'm coming from? Today, you jump in the car, you jump in the car, and you hear, baby, you know, pull your dress up so I can slip it to the side. I'm going to slip it to the side, and then I'm going to whip it up and down. You understand what I'm saying? Baby, you know, you got to get nice brains, baby. The brains is... Okay, come on, man. Are we stupid? I may be 39, but I ain't dumb. You don't even know what we talk about over here. Oh yes, I do. I ain't just got here. You're a product of who I am, but you just a little bit more. What's the word for it? You're like a familiar. You know, I got that from the movie Blade. You know, just a common mentality of people.
Right.
You become familiar. You're just common. And that's what's wrong with black radio. We don't talk about it, but I tell you this, go listen to white radio, and I'm not a prejudiced guy. You will not hear that stuff on white radio.
Hmm.
Not at when the kids come home from school. And that's what they listen
to. Well, I'm going to say this now, I listen to a lot of white radio now. They're having a lot of these artists now, young white artists are trying to do what the young black kids are doing. Like, I'm going to say people, and one of them used to be a very, she wasn't a successful gospel artist, but she was a gospel artist at one time, Katy Perry.
Right.
I love her material. But her material now is young
Perry?
Children. Yes.
You said Katy Perry?
She was a gospel artist?
Yes, she was a gospel.
Didn't know that.
Print artist at first. Her album didn't sell. She still wanted to be in the music. They told her, you want to make some money, you can do this, you can do that. Now they got her doing songs with the Amigos, talking about fellatio and all types of inappropriate things. And I hear little kids listening to the song, dancing to the song. I'm like, they look at the music video where they have her half naked with food on her body and people are eating food off her body. That's inappropriate to be on daytime television.
Right,
and
yeah. Well,
they're seeing it on their favorite talk show. These little kids are emulating that stuff, and that's not a good look for the children of today.
No, it's not a good look, and it's not building good, strong character. And we wonder why the kids are weaker. And they're very, very wise, that's for sure. But they certainly are weak in morality and spirituality. And all of those things are very, very important. I don't want to sound like a corny fogey, but I don't care because it's the truth. It is really the truth, man. You know, and I like this the question because, you know, I talk about things like this in the song Rougher and Rougher. I've been here for a minute and I've seen a lot of stuff go down, but I've never seen it as bad as it is today.
Wow.
Never.
Most definitely.
I've never
most
seen it this bad. It's rough, man. And I pray for these kids, man. I got young kids and grandkids and man, it's rough for them, you know. So we need to change how we designate our authority as parents and as people who can of authority who have a basic understanding of morality. You know, we need to bring some of that back. And I'm not talking about getting all holy roly and all of that stuff, because there's so much of that unholy roly stuff in the roly roly holy. It's unbelievable.
Yes, sir.
I hope nobody want to beat me up, because if you want to find the devil, you know what I'm saying? You know where to go. There's a bunch of them sitting around. You go in one. Everybody hallelujah. For what? Okay? That's as far as I'm going with this.
I hear you.
Most definitely. Well, in a few minutes, we're going to play his hot, sizzling hot. It's so hot. It's burning. It's melting out there. We're going to play Rougher and Rougher. And let us know before we play Rougher and Rougher a little bit about Rougher and Rougher.
Well, Rougher and Rougher was a song that I wrote many, many years ago. I wrote it many years ago, but I never did anything with it. It's just like it was a song that I wrote. And maybe I was a little bit far ahead of my time, but time had to catch up with me. And I wrote that song 40 years ago and decided that now was the time that I had to do something with it. And that's when you listen to the lyrics, you know, it's just at that point. And I gave it away, you know, I'm giving it away for free. I didn't try to sell it because I wanted everybody to hear it and get the message from it. You know what I mean? It ain't nothing for me to sit down and cut a song, man. It's easy. It's so simple, man. But this right here had a really significant meaning for the world today. And I just felt as though the world needed to hear this. And if everybody wanted to get a copy of it, you know, boom, you know, there it is. You go to get a copy of it and listen to the lyrics, you know, maybe it could wake some people up. You're not going to get everybody, but maybe some people will get it. And that's all you can ask for.
That's awesome. Now, before we go into the song and we do our little shout outs, tell us about the music video. Tell us about that amazing story about the video.
The video depicts everything that's happening in the world. I tried to grab a little bit of everything that the song was saying. And I got Tom Frickovich shooting. I have Charlene Holloway. She's in the video. I took some of the girls from Philly and put in the video. And, oh, man, it's crazy, man. I got Peter Leon. He's shooting a kid named Mikey. All my people, man, you know. I got a great staff here in Philadelphia, and from film to, you know, making records, man. And it's a beautiful thing. So that's pretty much what it is. It's it just depicts, you know, what's going on in the world today. Of course, me and my beautiful self, I am in it, and hopefully I'm
awesome.
I'm looking good enough to, you know, have them want to run up on stage and just touch my gown, you know.
Yes. Awesome.
I'm sorry. Awesome. I was thinking of something. I was thinking of, like, I was in a Moses mode for a minute. But
That's awesome. That's awesome. But I don't mean to cut you off. Let's give shout outs. Keith, you give your shout outs. Then T, we give you a shout out. Then we're going to debut your single or play it for a second time. Go ahead, Keith. You have any shout outs you want to do?
I just want to shout it. Well, not really. I just want to say hello to my beautiful wife, Ingrid. Hello to my girls, Kylie and Kennedy. Everybody at the Institute of Audio Research. Everybody out at the Center for the Media Arts. Jubilee International Ministry in Pittsburgh. Just want to send a big shout out back to New York, to my big brother Rowan and his beautiful kids, Naomi and Rebecca and Daniel, and everybody in the Fulton family. Give you a big shout out. Thanks so much for all the support and love. And we'll just keep it short and sweet for now. That's it.
Thank you. Now, let me ask you one quick question. Do any of your children want to become musicians or singers or songwriters?
They already are. My oldest daughter dances. I don't know if you follow the reality TV show Dance Moms. Well, that's actually conceived and shot here in Pittsburgh. But we were with her. Yeah, we were with her before she even had the show. And anyway, she's been a part of that, and that's moved on now because that's actually moved from here to LA now. And so we're with another dance company called Dance Mechanics, and she's just a fabulous dancer and model and singer, man. She's just really tearing it up already, and she's only 13.
That's awesome. Youngest, be on the lookout for his daughter in the next future. Be on the lookout for her. She's going to take over the industry like Janet Jackson and Mariah
Carey.
That's
right.
She's on that level.
Yeah, she's bad. She's great.
Beautiful.
Okay. Yeah, hand it over to T.
All right, now, T-Life, let's go with your shout-outs. Then we're going to play rougher and rougher because they need to hear this.
Well, I'm going to give a shout-out to all my girls and my staff, Mary Beth, Valencia, Yvonne. Let's see. Hell, I just lost everything. It just went totally blank. I got so many people that I want to shout out. Let's see, who else can I shout out? All the musicians, you know, all my people, man. You know, I can't think of anybody else. You know, I would say my wife, but my mistress might get mad, so I'm not gonna do that. But that's a joke. That was a joke. Let's see. I'll just keep it simple. They know who they are, and I wish I could shout out everybody, but there's just so many people to thank right now. I love them all, and I got some great people, you know. And I want to say that a lot of times I talk about, like, New York musicians and people like that, but my Philadelphia people I love very much, you know. All the girls, that same background for all of my stuff I've ever done here, Yvette and Carla and all of them, man, I'm gonna tell you, those girls did that same thing. They really did. And there's so many people to thank, man, here. Oh, yeah. And I got to say this. Jerome Braley, Bigfoot from Funkadelic Parliament, Teddy Rudolph the Sucker, that's my man. We're working on an artist that he has, which is one of his family members, and she's 17 now. Her name is Yanni, and man, she is hot. She's a rap artist, but she sings and raps, and she's also a producer. Okay,
now that's
and
awesome.
One other thing. Hell, she's crazy with it. I'm telling you, she produced like she can produce. I'm serious. And, of course, my country and western artist, CeCe Cannon. She's from Youngstown, Ohio. And she's got a new song out now. You guys might want to pick it up. It's called It's Too Late, CeCe Cannon Music. If you go to CeCe Cannon Music, you can get it. And that's the name of that song. How you like that, man?
That sounds okay. Great. Well, Tech, can you play Rougher and Rougher so we can close out this show with that dynamite song that the world needs to hear? Rougher and Rougher by T Life. Many years in the making, but worth every second. Oh, we good.
We good. I got you, baby. She's in the queue and playing.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a good show.
Thank you.